forces with Jews and Christians and Muslims around the world who are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and the safe return of all hostages and civilian prisoners and to stop the killing. Your final thoughts on this as Israel weighs a full-scale invasion of Rafah?
We should, all moral leaders needed to say no to what Hamas did to children and women. And no, no, no to what Israel, the Israeli government, and Netanyahu is now continuing to do. In the original argument I wrote about Hamas, I also challenged the apartheid state that the Netanyahu regime had had in Israel. We said we must speak as one voice, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, to say the indiscriminate killing of women and children in this war is immoral. And let me give you a scripture straight from the text that Muslims, Jews, and Christians all agree on. It's Isaiah 10. It ought to be a framework for how we move forward. Woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights and make women and children prey, P-R-E-Y. That is a moral text from the ancient Hebrew scriptures that Muslims and Christians all agree on. And it is a prophetic challenge to governments. And that must be our prophetic challenge to what Netanyahu and them are doing today.
Bishop William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, speaking to us from Durham, North Carolina. And Michael Zweig, economist and author of Class, Race, and Gender, Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. Bishop Barber wrote the introduction. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes. Happy birthday, Messiah. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO.
Good morning, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, 90.7 FM, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. This is KBOO FM, and today is Monday, the 12th of February, 2024. I am Cecil Prescott. My co-host is Celeste Carey.
And Good morning.
How are you today, Celeste?
I am fine, though I'm tempted to, you know, be just a little sad that the sun is not bright and shining like I wanted it to this morning. But I'm going to give it, you know, 75% chance.
Okay, 75%. And you know, if the sun isn't shining where you want it, the way you want it to be, go somewhere where it is.
Well, that's one way to think about it. It's one way to definitely think about it.
Exactly. So it's great, and we have a guest today, and I'm excited to speak to our guest, and we both, and Celeste and I are anxious. Let me preface by saying, when I was a young growing up, and my maternal grandmother, and this was, you know, revealing my age, this was during the time of the Vietnam War, and Nana said, she always said when I was growing up, she said, if they draft you, I will stand in front of that truck or whatever, and they will not take my one and only grandson. So I was always, you know, I always heard in the back of my mind my grandmother, you know, protecting her one and only grandson. And fortunately or unfortunately, I can't recall now, this is a sign of aging. I was either must have been the last class or the class before where the draft ended. So I did not have to experience that trauma. But many of people I knew did and continue to. One person we have with us is John Crusoe of the War Resisters League, who for many years has been a peace activist since the time of, I guess you were a young person, and has been insistent in raising awareness of military and military investment. Investment in public schools, and for many years has been serving as a conscientious, not only conscientious objector, but a conscientious person sharing information about the military in Portland and in the public schools. And so thank you so much, John, and thank you for coming here and sharing about your work and enlightening us about some things that are happening in our community.
Sure.
So why don't we just begin and share a little bit just initially about why you are so passionate about this, and why have you been doing this for these many decades now?
Yeah, actually this is my 39th year working on this issue here in Portland.
Okay, 39 years. Mm-hmm.
You know, you were talking about during the Vietnam War, and I was a draft resister during that period. I was involved in the first draft lottery that they had when I was in college. I was a senior in college and got a really low number.
Yes.
11, in fact.
Oh.
I had to figure out.
For people who are not even familiar with what that means, John, can you tell us why getting a low number would fill you with a little bit of dread?
Well, because they picked birthdays out of a hopper, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you had a low number, that meant that you were really likely to be. I mean, there was no doubt that I was going to be called up with number 11. Mm-hmm. It, you know, went from 1 to 365, you know. And so people who had, like, 270 or 300 or something didn't have to worry much, but people who had 11, it was a different matter. And so I just kind of scrambled around. I wound up going into the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I went to theological seminary for a while. And those things worked for me. I was actually able to stay out of the military, but it was a really tense time and a lot of stress. And there were periods when I had no idea whether they were going to, you know, come and arrest me or not, you know, because I was getting reporting dates and not reporting and hoping that my, you know, what I was doing was sufficient to keep me out. And it turns out that it was. But all that motivated me to, you know, to want to help other people in terms of part of it was I just didn't have good information either.
Right.
when all that was going on. You know, I think I went, at one point I went and talked to a draft counselor, but they weren't very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just, I didn't file as a conscientious objector because I didn't know enough about it at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when I moved to Portland in 1979, pretty soon after that, I got involved in the issues here. There were a couple of other people doing the work.
And there was a change in the national scene, just in terms of the draft was no longer there. So in terms of who were, I don't want to say threatened or felt the force of the military looking over them, it shifted in terms of the nation.
Yeah, but there was draft registration, which yes. It started mm-hmm. up right about that time.
Yes.
And so anyway, I started getting involved. I started by just speaking in some classes, you know.
Were you invited into classes?
Well, I had to kind of, you know, get those invitations, you know. I had to contact teachers and tell them what we were doing, and you know, there were some sympathetic teachers, and there were also some teachers who weren't necessarily on my side but just felt like there ought to be a response to all the recruiting that was going on. I mean, when I first went into schools, I was appalled. I mean, there were military recruiters in the hallways and in the cafeteria almost every day.
So they had access to the students and had conversations with students. Were students, did they have like an office and invite people, students into, or did
not
they
not so much an office, but they would, in the cafeteria, they would just kind of roam around the room. And I mean, officially they had a table, but they would roam around the room and sit with students and get to know them and flirt with the female students who would, you know, try on their hats and all that kind of, I mean, it was just, it was terrible.
So basically, they had what I would call kind of like unchaperoned access to young people.
Yeah,
and
when you said
draft counselor, again, you're talking to some people who may not know the intricacies of the draft. Can you explain why it would have been important to have somebody like that for the young people to have access to?
Well, there are legal alternatives to the draft. I mean, conscientious objection being the main one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know about it, and you know, then you can't exercise that right. So that's basically what draft counselors do. I mean, and there are also people who have, you know, grounds for legal deferment, you know, through like
right. physical. Like an only son, for example.
Like what?
An only son, or... If
yeah.
you have certain health challenges, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that, you know. But if people don't know about that, they draft boards aren't going to bend over backwards to help you through those obstacles, you know.
So how has, just in terms of clarify how the scene has changed so that people aren't drafted into the military these days.
No.
So what is it that the military offer, and what is it that you counter offer?
Well, first of all, in terms of the recruiting approach, I mean, after the Vietnam War, they basically decided that having a draft wasn't really viable because it just caused too much protest and, you know, got too many parents pissed off and stuff like that. So they decided to go into the schools and as an alternative, you know, to recruit in the schools. And so that's how that got set up. And so that's really their only way of meeting their recruiting quotas these days is through their involvement in the schools. And in most school districts, it's pretty intense. I mean, they do the kinds of things I was describing before, you know, just kind of roaming around the buildings. I mean, one of the places they recruited was in the bathrooms, you know. I mean, they would talk about kind of buttonhole students in the student bathrooms, you know, or they would in the cafeteria, like I described, you know, or whatever. And of course, now social media plays a big part in that, too. I mean, they recruit a lot over social media.
And they have had such great access to students and people like you and who have been working to offer alternatives to the military. Tell us a little bit about not the type of work you offer, but in terms of how you've been able to have, should I say, equal access to the students, and tell us about the history.
Well, that's
of that.
What we call it. It's not ever equal, of course, yes. But in the mid 1990s, we actually got a ban on military recruiting.
And where?
In Portland.
Portland Public Schools.
Okay. Portland High Schools. For about 7 years. It started in 1995. It took us 3 years to lobby the school board to get it in place, but we got some of the right, you know, some board members who were, I can't say they were completely on our side. The issue the school board took was around discrimination against gay and lesbians in the military.
This was at a time when...
Yeah, it was before all those changes took mm-hmm. place. And the school board just could not bring itself to vote, you know, to support that kind of discrimination.
Discrimination.
They didn't really care about a lot of the other issues we were raising, but they went with that, and so we went with that.
So for about 7 years, that was the policy.
Yeah, until No Child Left Behind came in, and then they had to. They couldn't continue because they would have lost their federal funding if they had continued.
What was No Child Left Behind?
Well, that was George W. Bush's policy for, I mean, it did a lot of things, but part of it was required school districts to allow military recruiters into the school, and also the release of personal information, you know, names, addresses, and phone numbers of students unless they opted out. Mm-hmm. It's complicated, but... you know, students had the right to opt out, but didn't necessarily know that they had that right, you know, and parents didn't either, you know.
Okay, there's a lot of information.
So yeah.
Students had or currently have an opportunity to opt out. What does that mean, opt out of what?
It means the names, addresses, and phone numbers won't be released to the military if they opt out.
And that's the policy of Portland Public Schools currently? Or
yeah, not just Portland Public Schools, but every school district. You know, they if they want to keep their federal funding, they have to comply with that.
Okay, and so you're part of possibly the only organized effort to get information out there to counteract the effects of not only the military being back in schools and doing recruiting, but just that vacuum of information that exists currently anyway about your options. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So share a little bit about the information that you are able, when you're allowed to share with the students, because certainly, and before the program today, we were talking about a sports program yesterday, and I don't know, but I'm supposed it was wrapped around with a lot of militarism around that and stuff like that, and I'm sure the military probably had ads.
I don't know. I didn't watch it either.
Yeah, ads.
I didn't either.
But so how? I mean, with that massive budget. And the attitude, we're just going on and on about everything. How do you counter the force of the military and offer alternatives? And what are things that parents and students need to know?
Well, it's, you know, it's difficult. I mean, we're not tremendously successful, you know, but we do the best we can is what I have to say. I mean, you know, you ask what do parents and students need to know. I think they need to know more about the military before the students enlist, you know. I mean, most students in my experience who enlist in the military don't really know what they're getting into. They don't necessarily know how long they're going to be in and what they're committing to, you know, because they don't. Military recruiters tell students what they want to hear. They make it sound as rosy as possible. And, you know, some recruiters lie because they want to meet their quotas, but a lot of recruiters don't have to do that. They just, you know, it's kind of the sin of omission, you know? I mean, they don't really tell them what it's all about. They don't talk at all about combat or, you know, war or anything like that. I mean, it's all about the benefits and, you know, and they don't tell them that if they get less than an honorable discharge, they don't get those benefits, you know, things like that. I mean, it's, when I go and, talk to students, pardon me?
It's actually even more than that, John. Now, I come from a family that most of my family members served in the military. Two siblings and my mom did not.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us were approached in college, but not everybody has the opportunity to understand, like you said, what they're getting into. And it's not just the students who don't know, it's their parents and guardians who don't know. And they target people very often from certain socioeconomic areas.
Oh, definitely.
Because they recognize that people don't always have the time, the energy, or the understanding of how to research something like that.
Well, and not only that, but a lot of students don't see any options at all after high school. You know,
exactly. I mean, that's why I was saying, yes. Mm-hmm.
But you know, signing up for a bad option is not really, you know, something that I would recommend. You know, I mean, it's, I would say about 80% of the students I talk to sign up for the military because they want money for college.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And most of those students aren't going to go to college because, for one thing, they may not get those benefits. Like I said, they might get in a little bit of trouble and wind up with a general instead of an honorable discharge and lose those benefits. They might get out of the military with a lot of PTSD and not be able to do college, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why people don't follow through with those benefits.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking this morning with John Greshall of the War Resisters League, talking about counter-military recruitment that they are engaged in, and more specifically about a possible proposal before the Portland Public Schools. And I want to hold people who have called. We're going to speak a little bit longer with John before we take calls, so... if you're holding, you might want to hang up and call back again so that John can share the information out first. But John, tell us about this possible new proposal with the Portland Public School and why people should be concerned about it.
Yeah, there's actually two things going on right now. One is there's a proposal being pushed pretty hard by board member Herman Green to introduce... Junior ROTC into Portland Public Schools. That's Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps. It's a program that's in many cities around the country. It's been around for quite a while, but it has, you know, we haven't had anything like that in Portland before. And in my estimation, Junior ROTC is not a good program. It's all about military recruiting, despite the fact they say that it isn't. And I can go through a lot of details about it, but
explain a little bit more about what is JROTC, what it is that they claim it is, and then you can talk about.
Well, the reason this came up in the first place is there's always a struggle in public schools about students who are not succeeding. You know, students who are just ready to drop out, or you know, just not really into school at all. And so that's kind of where this came from, of course. So the people who run Junior ROTC, you know, claim that they're the solution to that problem, you know, that they're going to motivate students.
So, you know, students are unmotivated, they don't have any energy, don't have any sense of direction in their life, and this program, you know, parents are frustrated. My child is lethargic, they're not doing anything. And this looks like something that will allow them to be fully mature.
Yeah, the problem is it is all about recruiting. It's all about indoctrinating students. You know, there are two two junior ROTC instructors in a school when they set it up in a high school, and they teach classes, and they're not, first of all, they're not really trained to be teachers. They don't even have to have college degrees. I mean, some do, some don't, but you know, they're just basically retired. They're just basically retired military people, mm-hmm. and they're not really, you know, up to speed in terms of the rest of the faculty, you know.
Yeah.
And another thing is, you know, the program costs money. The school district has to pay for one of those two salaries initially.
Oh.
Plus sometimes other staff too, you know, like property specialists, clerical staff, sometimes a special administrator if there are several programs in the district. And then there are other costs too that get passed on after a couple of years. Basically, the program tries to dump the full cost of the program on the school district. Mm. You know, after a few years, initially they say, well, it's not going to cost you much, we're going to subsidize it. But then as it goes on, they pass on those costs, you know. So it gets pretty expensive. And, you know, the classes they teach are just military training, you know. And they're saying, well, students don't have to go into the military just because they're in JROTC. Mm-hmm. But for students who are in the program for up to 3 years, 40% of those students do go into the military, you know.
Right. Well, we're speaking this morning with John, who's talking about, with the War Resistance League, and talking about a proposal before the Portland Public Schools to have JROTC within Portland Public Schools. That there's a proposal by one of the...
Yeah, we don't know if it's going to be all the high schools or some of the high schools.
Collective high schools, yeah. And so he's raising the alarm about this and will share with us possible actions we can take. But let me remind you that you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil with Celeste. And let's have a conversation. We have a caller. Corey has some experience relevant to... that he would like to share.
Okay.
Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Corey. Good morning. Thank you all so much for this conversation. Having lived in Portland, I remember mentoring a lot of young men. I worked at Warner Pacific, I'll just say it. But I remember mentoring some young men who wanted to go to the military, and I did see those really sort of negative tactics. I also remember mentoring and noticing that the recruiters were at Jefferson. And I remember because you would see their vehicles parked out there. They'd have the government vehicles, but you would never see, my wife went to St. Mary's, which is a private school. You're not going to see that there. So you know that, okay, we're going to target X type of student versus Y type
there
of student.
Go.
And that's just,
mm-hmm.
and that was kind of baked in. And also those tactics, they also affect people like myself. I remember when I got out of the Army, I served from 96 to 99. And I was offered, you know, $5,000 to show up for the Texas National Guard. I didn't read the fine print. So I remember when I signed up for the National Guard, I went there. And then after I got there, like, oh, you don't get this money because your MOS is different. I'm like, what? Like that, you know, and so it was just like, wait a minute. Like, I was told one thing, and here I am, someone who served active duty, and then I was going to serve the state of Texas, and I was told something else. And so that just doesn't affect students. That affects, like, I was just like, whoa, that was sort of, beyond shady even for me. But yeah, those, you know, even when it comes to those misleading promises, especially because they target struggling working class families and especially communities of color, let's just be honest. I saw where this recruiter promised a young man citizenship because they were undocumented, and the military cannot directly grant citizenship.
That's right.
And legal residency as well. But I've seen recruiters actually lie, and I'm glad the student came to me. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. Like, that's not the way it works. And I remember I'd maybe upset some of that recruiting station. I don't know if it's still there, but it's off of 82nd, where, like I came in with maybe about three or four young people. I'm just like, no, that doesn't sound on the up and up. And I'm glad I was there. I'm one person, but I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. And then my final piece is this. Even with the GI Bill, I was able to serve, like I said, 96, 99, get out, use my GI Bill, get a PhD. I've even seen that go down, I think. And I wish there was more data on how many people actually use their GI Bill, because let's just say it is quite difficult. And I'll just give you some inside baseball. Like, what happens is, like, the first year you join the military, they match you. So, like, it's $100 a month for, like, the first 12 months. And then, like, if I serve for 3 years, okay, the military is going to match that. But if you're only making $900 a month, and this was 20-something years ago, that's, you know, now you're down to 800. So even that, it's like, what does the government really need this $1,200, you know, over the next year? It was just very, the process itself was just like, you know, it seemed like it was a negative process. So I wonder how many people actually even use their GI Bill, because the last I did check, it wasn't a lot. Like, I think some students do use it, but once you sign up, you either get out, you have a family. You know, it's not the easiest process. It's not horrible, but once again, it's not the easiest process either. So, like I said, I just commend you on what you're doing, and I wish there was more education out there like that, and I'm glad you're kind of out there spreading the word. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Military recruiters can tell you anything, and there's no consequences, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and once you get into the military, you're just stuck with what you get. I mean, that's kind of the way it works.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because I think even for me, when I signed my contract, you sign an 8-year contract. Even right. though I only served active duty for 3 years, I'm signed up, I think they're called inactive reserve, for 8 years. I don't think that's the yeah. it was at the time. And I know people that don't even, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got called back. I'm like, yeah, because you're still inactive reserve. But I don't think they actually explain that. I'm glad I had uncles and grandfathers who actually served in the military as well. So I knew how to get in, get my GI Bill, get out. But that's not the case for everybody. So, like I said, I appreciate the conversation, and I'll kind of sign off. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
for your call for it. You know, and one of the things that's a challenge is that even if you get out with an honorable discharge, even if you manage to serve and not have any traumatic experiences, physically and mentally or emotionally, there's no guarantee you're going to have 100% access to your GI benefit. I can't tell you how many times I've been up with friends and family to VA hospital, being an advocate for them to get care that they should have received as part of the benefits of their service. And they can't get care. Adequate care. And if you recall, I'm trying to remember which president, whether it was Obama or it might have been under Obama, where they discovered how badly run the VA hospitals were and how some of them were just abysmal in how they took care of veterans. And I know people say, well, you served in a war, yada, yada, yada. That's not really the point. The point is, this was supposed to be a contract, and it was not honored.
Well, another thing is, too, a lot of veterans won't go near the VA. I mean, I know a lot of veterans who are now getting served for issues from the Vietnam War, but they couldn't do it for like 10 or 20 years, you know. They just couldn't bring themselves to be in that environment, you know.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil with Celeste. We're speaking with John of the War Resistance League, talking about a proposal before the Portland Public Schools to invite the military create a JROTC, Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps in Portland Public Schools. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. If you have experience with the military and military recruitment, we would like to hear your story. And if you have some thoughts, also call. Let's go to our next caller, Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. It really brings to mind, because Corey brought up a good point about how, you know, these recruiters never go into rich neighborhoods, you know, these JROTC or whatever, you know, they don't come into places where people have money. The fact that, like, a lot of the neighborhoods that they go into are purposely impoverished so that it creates the need for whatever GI benefits they're going to convince these kids that they get. And it's not lost on me that historically the Army has always used that offer that he talked about, where, you know, they say, oh, you get citizenship if you serve in the Army. You know, there's a perfect example of people who live in American Samoa who are a possession. They are a colony of the United States, and they are allowed to enlist and fight for the country, but they have no rights to self-determination, even something as simple as voting they don't have access to. So, you know, the fact that, like, they're willing to, the fact that it's even an option really just speaks to white supremacy, I think, especially in black and brown neighborhoods. I don't know if we really have, like, a Mexican equivalent, but I know a lot of brothers and sisters that I'm friends with who grew up, you know, they were shown Lean on Me all the time. Because they thought that, you know, because they thought that the message that, you know, needed to be sent to young black youth was that, you know, the problem is that you're not disciplined. Mm. So we're going to show you, you know, we want to give authority to, you know, authoritarian figures to come into your life and to shake you up in violent ways in order to get you to act right, to be able to exist in our Eurocentric society. So I just, you know, and plus, like, having experience with my cousin who is 34, he just committed suicide a couple of years ago, and he served in Iraq, you know, during the following 9/11, and we've seen how this government lies to people in order to justify these wars, and it creates a false sense of unity. You know, I'm really glad that, you know, that they're bringing this up, because we don't need to lose any more babies to this war machine. You know,
I just wanted to correct one thing you said. The military does actually recruit in places like Lake Oswego, but they recruit for the academies, you know. Mm. It's a whole different pitch, you know.
Well, that is true, but I think it's more to the point that, like, you know, that the bulk of the people who serve, even though they might recruit in rich communities, the people who are dying on the front lines.
Care.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it's a whole different sales pitch. I mean, if you're recruited out of North Portland, you're not recruited with any real benefits or options. You're just, you know, you're just...
Well, let me include East Portland in that, you know, gentrification. Yeah. You know, but your point is well taken. And, you know, for people who don't know and think, well, isn't ROTC kind of like giving them discipline, first, I want to point out something, and John, you can back me up here. ROTC versus JROTC are two different things. Mm-hmm. When you're in the junior reserve officers training course, that's all glamorizing the idea of the tools of war. It doesn't really point out the connection with death. You know, when you're actually in ROTC, you're a little bit more emotionally and mentally developed. And so you can make your choices better. You haven't become indoctrinated. You know, you're able to maybe compare and contrast at a higher level. Whereas when you're in junior ROTC, there's more emphasis on the fun and games.
Yeah.
And who doesn't like fun and games?
John, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. And in fact, in some cases, there's junior ROTC in middle school. Hmm. Which is just ridiculous. But yeah, it's a good point.
So JROTC is not the same as Future Farmers of America or Girl Scouts. It's,
well, I mean the difference is that it's in the curriculum. It's, you know, they're teachers in the school who are teaching this stuff. They're not necessarily qualified, you know, but they're doing that. But
you might find Future Farmers of America in the schools. You know, I remember some of the schools when I was part of an AmeriCorps program. I worked in schools from Roosevelt out in North Portland to Sam Barlow out in Gresham. And one of the things I found is, you know, there were lots of different programs that that basically accentuated some of the potential life choices and career choices that you could make that was relevant to your area. But the thing that makes this so much different is, and it, you know, it's an obvious point, but I just have to say it, is that, you know, we're talking about your child learning how to kill. And, you know, one thing you haven't said that I think really bears stating also, John, is that there's a big difference between the military that we have now and the military that maybe our parents and grandparents might remember before our imperial overreach was at the level it's at now. You know, we could talk about strong national defense, which is a whole lot different than going in and undermining some other country, right. You know, and those are the differences, you know, and the reasons why we really want to limit the military access to our young people, is at least until they're of the age of reason, so to speak, you know?
Well, another thing that's going on, too, is those programs are voluntary, and JROTC is supposed to be voluntary, but in a lot of school districts, in order to see, they have to keep a certain attendance level up to keep the program. Mm-hmm. It's part of the federal requirements. They have to, if they fall below a certain attendance rate, then the program goes away. And so what they're doing is they're requiring students to take JROTC in a lot of districts, you know.
Wow.
I mean, it goes against the way the program was set up and against their rules, but they're doing it anyway. You know, they're just requiring students to put it on their curriculum and instead of gym class, you know.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. We're speaking with John of the War Resistance League, talking about counter-military recruitment and the necessity to challenge what he sees is will be developing within the Portland Public Schools. We have a couple of callers online, but let's go to our first caller. Sylvia, thank you so much for waiting.
Hello. Thank you, Cecil. I wanted to bring up one dimension that Cecil and Celeste and John might want to comment more on, and that is at the level of the schools, the curriculum and the education, I wanted to point out how the JROTC is being introduced here in Portland as an opportunity for students who are disaffected, or other words are used for students who don't have a goal and can't see their future out of high school, or don't excel in the academic track and aren't really enticed with a more vocational track. And these students, it is said by people pushing the program, really need a new opportunity, and this will be an equitable move to create this program in our schools. And I really want to just point out really briefly that this is a really terribly inequitable argument, and that the reason the schools have so many students who aren't feeling part of the school community is that the curriculum and the extracurricular activities need to be improved. And instead of doing a detour and pushing these students, who tend to be students of color or low income, into they're pushing these students into a track, instead of doing the work that we need to put our money and our energy into of improving our schools so that these students do feel welcome and can find a purpose there. So it's a terrible problem for the schools to introduce this military so-called education. And then I really wanted to second Celeste's comments about the wider U.S. military mission. I work educating the students about the recruiting in the schools so that they can see the truth about recruiting. And so I hear what the recruiters are saying to the students. The military people are telling the students all sorts of wonderful things about service and its rewards. And they never, in my hearing, for years, have mentioned the words war, killing, death, violence, destruction, or being killed or being injured. Not once have I heard one soldier say that to one student. So I'd love to hear your comments, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Sylvia. John, do you have any comments?
Well, I think Sylvia's absolutely right. I mean, this is just not a solution to the problems that are, of students not succeeding or not being a part of the school community. I mean, if anything, it's going to separate them from the school community even more. Mm-hmm. There's a program, a JROTC program at Reynolds High School, and a teacher there has written an article about her experience with the program, and she says it's like having a second school within a school, And it's not a good school either. It's not academically, it's terrible, and it's just indoctrination, And they actually had a school shooter come out of that JROTC program who shot students there several years ago,
Something else to consider, when Sylvia talked about this being offered as an alternative type of career goal or profession goal, what it is it's kind of dressed up as another vocation without calling it another vocation. And when you look at it that way, it's not any different than having vocational or training. And really, rather than to use this cop-out measure, schools need to really work at having more vocational and trade options,
right,
if they have young people who feel disaffected. Because sometimes maybe they're artisans, or maybe they're going to grow up to be a superior mechanic that leads to them becoming a mechanical engineer. We don't know. But I do know that, having a class in high school that basically takes the fun elements of, sonar or maybe munitions and makes a game out of it, gamifies it, is not what we need for our young people as an object. There was a question I wanted to ask you, though, John, before I forget, and that is, what kind of connections have you made with local school boards to really boost their awareness of the situation that you're outlining for us with the JROTC?
And if I may add to that, what is your request for people to do specifically around the Portland Public School, mm-hmm, and yes, the proposal that one of the members will have?
Yeah, well, it's just been really difficult. I mean, we were just lucky to find out about this. Somebody heard that it was in a committee meeting and called us, and said, you need to do something, The proposal is still in the Student Success Committee at this point. It hasn't gone to the full board yet. And when it goes, it could go really quickly, so we have to be ready. And what I would encourage people to do is to call the school board members. There's seven of them all together, plus a student rep, and to call them and just express your opinions about this proposal, because we'd also like people to be at that meeting when it is discussed and voted on, but it's difficult to organize around that because we don't know when it's going to be,
Yeah. You mentioned, what happened in the 90s in terms of eliminating military recruitment and, mm-hmm, and the organizing around that. Have you identified allies on the school board that are approachable?
There are a couple of board members that have told us that they're not really excited about this program, but they're not firmly against it, and I'm not sure they're really going to be strong advocates, So, you know, we're still working on that. We're still contacting school board members, trying to meet with them. Most of them don't seem to want to meet, you know, and that kind of thing. So we're doing the best we can. You
know. And I know maybe unlike the U.S. military, your budget is probably smaller than there in terms of recruitment. So what can people do in terms of getting information from you or assisting you, or what can your allies help in this,
Well, you want me to give out phone numbers? And
yes, this is your time to
share information. Please.
Okay, well, the phone number is 503-440-8325. And that's my personal cell, and that's how I would like you to contact me. And we also have an email. It's WRL, that's War Resisters League, WRL.pdx@gmail.com.
Excellent.
So, get in touch with us. And if I can find, you know, when I find out when it's going to the full board, I'll be calling as many people as I can. So get on the list, you know. It happens quickly, so it's going to be hard to to coordinate
to
that.
Coordinate, yeah. And I suppose not by accident that it's hard. They make it more difficult.
Yeah, they you can go on the Portland School Board website and check out the agendas and so forth, but they're confusing, you know. I mean, they don't necessarily say exactly what they're talking about or where things are. I mean, it's just, you know, like for instance, a couple days ago I saw, you know, I get all the, you can sign up to get all the meeting announcements and agendas. And I saw on one that there's an agenda item on the policy committee tonight to review the military recruiting policy for possible revisions. So I'm really concerned about that. I'm afraid that either the military is going to get more access, mm-hmm. or we're going to be cut out, you know, in terms of our equal access. So it seems to me that the Portland Recruiting District has the ear of at least one of the school board members at this point, and if that's what's going on, you know, in terms of both JROTC and this other issue of revising the recruiting policy, which includes us.
You mentioned that there were possible, I think you mentioned two board members who might be sympathetic, but certainly did not feel like they could lead the charge. So what can we do to encourage them that they're not alone, that there are people who would support?
Well, like I said, you can call school board members. If you just go Google Portland Public Schools or Portland School Board, rather, and then there's members and you click on that, and it's got a bio for each one, and it's got their email address. So you can't talk to them on the phone because it's hard to get their phone numbers, but you can send them an email.
Certainly. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. We're speaking with John of the military, no, not the military, of the War Resisters League.
Right.
And we have a caller who's been waiting. I'm sorry for keeping you on hold so long. Cherry, I believe?
Yes. Thank you, John, for your years of service. Often when I go to New Seasons on Tuesday and I hear somebody say, well, I get the military discount, they get a 10% off their groceries. And I asked the clerk, is there a 10% discount for people that are resisting the war? They usually look at me a little bit dumbfounded.
I love it.
I agree with Sylvia. I, too, have never heard a military recruiter give anything but such a positive idea of what the military is like. The last time I was at Franklin, I was right next to the Army. And on the wall above the tall man's head was a small sign that said $50,000 bonus for joining. And I said, well, I bet that's not for the average young person that wants to join. It's probably for a specialist. But this country is insane on its military war all throughout the world. The budget I've heard recently, I've always heard it's around close to $900 billion, but I heard that it was $1.5 trillion, and I'm, what? And then the person said that's because nuclear weapons have not been added to that account. And if they're added, the military budget is $1.5 trillion. I wrote down 1.5, T-R-I-L-L-I-O-N. And then I do what I usually do. I wrote down the figure. Try writing out $1.5 trillion, and you keep adding zeros, and then you start counting. Is that enough? Back to the school board. About 20 years ago, when I was in a school board hearing one night, the school board had unanimously previously voted to make Benson High School a pre-nursing school. Two older gentlemen got up and testified together. They had been graduates of Benson High School, and they were very kindly protesting against the school board decision. And I was appalled. You know, Benson High School helps a lot of the young men whose preference isn't for academics, but is to work with their hands. And the school board just belittled that. Mm. And eventually they changed their mind. But the vote unanimously was to make Benson High School a pre-nursing school about 20 years ago. And one of the school board members who voted on that at the time is back on the current school board.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and reminding us to be aware of what's going on and to be active.
Well, I want to make one further point quickly, Cecil. If the Portland Public School Board would tell Portland Public School teachers to quit teaching to the test, that is not learning, that is rote, that is good for learning poetry, learning speeches. It is not education. And if they made education more interesting, then perhaps there wouldn't be so many students struggling, because history is very interesting.
Thank you. We have run a little bit short on time, but I appreciate what you share in terms of what is education and what it should be. Thank you so much for your call. And let's see if we can get our last caller in. Edie, good morning.
Good morning.
You have about 2 minutes.
For the years that I was trying to persuade both the Portland Public Schools Administration and voters and students to not allow the military recruiting in the schools, I heard that the folks were saying that colleges are not affordable. Even if you can get scholarships and things like that, you can't survive all the expenses and the culture shock, etc. And it's not the right thing for a lot of people. Franklin High School in Portland Public Schools had the state's best wood and metal shop, and before that, best auto shop in the state, and that was cut. We are destroying what we need for the problem solving, the understanding of multicultural, multi-religious perspectives of the world and how to problem solve complex problems facing us, from climate change to growing fascism, the growing corporatism that impoverishes the majority of us. We need to have thinkers.
You have 30 seconds.
And we need to let folks know how the military makes folks scared and react with violence and destruction and dishonesty. And that brings back domestic violence and school shootings and self-harm.
10 seconds.
So we need to show how having that cuts what we really need in preparation for the world we need, and it causes immediate harm to those imposed upon.
Thank you so much, Edie. John, thank you so much for being part of this discussion this morning and telling us how important it is to be aware of what's going on in our public schools and the necessity to counter recruit. Give us your
give us your
phone number and your email address. Your email address, probably.
Well, the phone number is 503-440-8325, and the email address is wrl.pdx@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, John, and thank you for your work of peacemaking and the necessity to make all of us public students, parents, and school board aware of how we need to work for peace.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, and we need to stop the these programs.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Stay tuned for more programming. And for Celeste, I am Cecil. Have a great day.
And I am Celeste.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO throughout February every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for Black History Future Month, our special programming series in celebration of Black heritage. This series